kind of what it comes down to, I think, is any virus that has a predilection for the reproductive tract or systemic is probably going to be shed in the semen. And those that sort of stay put where they're at, like your influenza, possibly the sapovirus, some of those that don't really circulate that much systemically or have a predilection for the reproductive tract are probably not going to be in the semen.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Keep your feed safe from pathogens with VVC Premix. VVC Premix from DSM Firmenich is made up of ultra-pure benzoic acid and nature-identical flavorings to guard your feed and improve performance. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Start your journey with us at eastman.com. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet.
Hello and welcome back to the Swine It Show. Today we have Dr. Darvin Reichs here with us. He's the owner of the Reichs Veterinary Research and Consulting operation. He's been in practice for over 31 years after graduating from Iowa State in 1994. He has given almost 200 presentations or papers at professional meetings and 16 peer-reviewed articles, right? So pretty active science-wide here beyond his own practice. And as a recognition for that, he received the Lehman Science in Practice Award in 2005 and also the Iowa State University Science with Practice Award in 2017. So welcome to the show, Dr. Reichs.
Thank you.
And we in this episode here, there's many things we can cover here with Dr. Reichs, but we're going to start talking about disease transmission and shedding in semen, right? But before that, I know that most people know you, Dr. Reichs, but do you mind giving a quick introduction here of your professional and academic background for those that perhaps international folks and the younger audience?
Sure. Yep. I graduated in 1994 and joined a practice here in Minnesota for 22 years, was there and developed graduated just before a lot of changes were being made as far as the expansion of artificial insemination in the U.S. I had an interest in that. And so I sort of just grew, I guess, with the industry of implementation of boar studs and semen quality. And of course, with boar studs, the disease transmission and a lot of the problems when we had boars at first were on farm, getting sick from the resident herds. We solved a lot of that, moving them to boar studs. But then, unfortunately, some boar studs were getting infected with PRRS virus, and that was very frustrating. Mm-hmm. So that sort of drew me into how to solve that problem and got me into air filtration and already always working a lot with biosecurity, but air filtration, and because of air filtration, sort of forced me to really hone my skills with ventilation. So I do a lot of that. I started my own practice in the end of 2016, there, start of 2017. I have a andrology lab where we do semen quality analysis for boar studs, mostly in the U.S., some Canada, some in international. And then I have a small research farm where I've done quite a few transmission studies with PRRS, Seneca virus, PED, Circo virus, and other studies with piglets and sows and such too, but primarily boars. And Dr. Megan Hood joined me a few years ago as an associate. And we also manage, our clinic provides management services for three boar studs and adding another fourth one this year.
For swine nutritionists and veterinarians seeking more effective solutions to support nursery pig performance, Viva Vital from DSM Firmenich is an ultra-pure form of benzoic acid that, when used as a feed acidifier, enhances nutrient digestibility and optimizes post-weaning growth rates. Research has shown Viva Vital improves average daily gain, average daily feed intake, and feed to gain when fed in starter rations at a 0.5% inclusion rate. Get better post-weaning performance. Learn more at dsm-firmish.com/vivavital.
We're going to talk about it all. It's I guess you could say that you're one of the only ones who saw it all, right? Boar studs evolving from very manual, not a lot of technology, to after the adoption of artificial insemination, as you said, then things kind of forced to be more controlled, more technological, more professional. So we're going to talk about that. And so you talked about diseases, right? And so what do we know today about pathogen transmission and shedding in semen?
Yeah, the big one here in North America is PRRS virus. I've done six different transmission studies with PRRS and detecting. We know it gets transmission. We know it's transmitted in the semen. That was shown in the late 90s. Jean Christopher Hennings, her group over there, did a lot of great work and really, really were leaders there. Unfortunately, we sort of verified that in the field. A lot of people don't know this except us that have been around a while, but most boar studs were PRRS positive up until around 2000. So that was quite a challenge. We had a strategy that didn't really work that well, honestly, but the idea was we'd bring in positive boars and a lot of times hold them in an off-site and do tonsil biopsy, those types of things, before we moved them in. Then there's a couple of leaders in the genetic side, did eradications in the nucleus farms. We followed that with closures and eradications on the boar stud side. So then around that 2003, 2004 is when we started to see a lot of aerosol, area spread and aerosol transmission. And a fair number of boar studs were getting infected, around 25% per year, kind of in that 2003, 2004. So we know PRRS is a big one. The timeline's really important. The testing's really important with PRRS virus. Going to some of the other ones, we've got Seneca virus. I did a study with Matt Styros back in 2017. That one, we used both strains of Seneca, the traditional strain and the modern strain. The modern strain shed in the semen pretty quickly. We had virus out of one boar in the semen the next day. So that was a little scary. We tried to inseminate gilts. They didn't get infected, but we had low numbers and believed like that it would be likely that would transmit. A couple endemic diseases, parvovirus, circovirus. I've done three big studies with circovirus back in the kind of 2006 to 2008 when the PCV2B was coming around. We know that sheds in the semen. Pretty much every boar stud is going to be positive. The shedding is very sporadic with that one. Not sure what to do with that one. It's endemic, of course. Not really much we feel we can do. We do vaccinate. Most boar studs vaccinate to reduce the shedding, but it's a sporadic shedder. Then you've got kind of other ones. You got your foreign animal, Japanese encephalitis virus, African swine fever. I'm getting ready to do the second big study with African swine fever this summer. That definitely sheds in the semen. It's definitely transmissible. We had 50% of the animals infected after insemination with infectious semen. Foot and mouth, classical swine fever. Kind of what it comes down to, I think, is any virus that has a predilection for the reproductive tract or systemic is probably going to be shed in the semen. And those that sort of stay put where they're at, like your influenza, possibly the sapovirus, some of those that that don't really circulate that much systemically or have a predilection for the reproductive tract are probably not going to be in the semen.
Going back a little bit on the PERS, you said that would you say that if you have a boar stud that's infected with PERS, is it possible to eliminate it again? Or what's the success rate on that one, doing some sort of exposure or?
Yeah, of course. We did quite a few eliminations in boar studs, again, kind of in that 99, 2000, 2001 time period. It's basically the same thing as doing a sow farm, but with a smaller population and no piglets. The trouble is, by the time you get it eliminated, it's normally a lot more cost effective to depopulate. There's no market for the semen. The boars aren't worth that much. You can typically do a depopulation, be empty a couple of weeks and be getting new boars in and be up and running in probably, 6 weeks. Not full speed, but at least be sending semen out. Versus waiting 200 or 220 or 240 days. It really doesn't make sense to try to do a elimination anymore. It's just a lot faster and quicker just to depopulate.
And you always have those laggers that most of the population is negative by X many weeks, but then you have those few ones that are still right. So
yeah.
I see. Yeah. Well, you didn't mention mycoplasma, right? Mycoplasma may be a concern for some. What are your thoughts on the risk of mycoplasma high pneumonia being shed in semen or transmitted?
Yeah, mycoplasma is an interesting one. I get asked that a lot. There's not really any studies where people went looking for it. All I can say is I have, clients. We have several clients that have been sending semen from a mycoplasma boar stud to a nucleus farm in some cases, decades. There's a couple of farms been getting semen three times a week for about 25 years, and we've never had a transmission event. I don't really see how it could get shed in the semen. There's just so many examples like that of years or even decades with a positive boar stud sent into negative farms. There's some concern about saliva getting in the semen, but all the extenders have antibiotics in them. And I don't know, I think there's been so many situations in the field with mycopositive boar studs sending to negative farms, 150 times a year. And for 10, 15, 20 years, I really don't think there's any risk of mycoplasma.
Yeah, even if it is, there's some kind of cross-contamination, like you said, from saliva or from whatever. Even if it's there, hard to believe how is it going to be replicating in the uterus, right, and actually becoming... It's not where mycoplasma replicates, but that's one we hear a lot. So good to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
People are now talking about the emergence of PCV3 as another reproductive disease, especially in young sows with not a lot of immunity, right? The gilts. And so your thoughts on, should we be concerned of PCV3 in the semen?
I'm not sure, honestly. I'd say it's probably very likely that it's shed in the semen. We haven't done a lot of monitoring in boar studs, but when people send in tissues from a boar, it does show up. I really doubt that there's any negative boar studs for PCV3, and I'm sure if we went looking for it, we would probably find it. Whether there's enough load there to infect a sow, don't really know. With the PCV2, the only way we showed transmission was a spiked sample. I had done a study with vaccine. We showed that it does reduce the shedding. We tried to inseminate, did not get sows infected. Another study showed that with a spike sample, they were. So I think with a lot of these viruses, it's a load issue. It's probably different for each virus. If there's a ton of virus there, it can overwhelm. This exception being PERS, I don't think it takes much at all there to transmit. We would we would routinely see, you know, without any intervention or just in the early 2000s there, if a boar stud would get infected, typically we would pick it up. If they were doing semen PCR, they might pick it up there, or it would be off feed boars, that type of thing. And then, you know, it wasn't unusual to have 25% of the sow farms infected downstream. So that that's the reason for testing for PRRS.
And people would be a correct assessment that people would test, is it better to test the blood?
Yeah.
Than the semen itself, or would you test both? What's your kind of preferred protocol for that?
Yeah, at first it was kind of thought and sort of logical that, okay, if we test the semen and there's nothing in the semen, then we're good to go. And unfortunately, I still run across that thought process, especially in internationally, I would say more so. Mm-hmm. But that it really doesn't work. And, you know, it's been proven out so many times that it doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is, you know, first the virus is in the blood and circulating in the blood, and then it perfuses the reproductive tissues. And it's difficult. There's a lot of interference with the PCR, and it doesn't, you don't find much. The different studies I've done with PRRS, you know, you're finding 10,000 times more in the blood versus the semen. There's typically a day or 2 or 3 day delay. And then I think the thing that people misunderstand is you know, boar is given an ejaculate of 300-400 milliliters sometimes. You send that to a lab and they're taking out a couple hundred microliters, and it's sort of a needle in a haystack looking for the macrophages that are containing a lot of the virus. And you might take the same sample, and it's a non-homogeneous fluid. I mean, you hold up a bag of semen, and there's all kinds of swirls in there. There's the sperm, there's the cells. And when you look at under a microscope, you hardly ever see a macrophage. You hardly ever see white blood cells. I mean, they're so dominated by sperm and just fluid, mm-hmm. that, you know, it's literally a needle in the haystack. You might poke in, you know, stick your hand into the haystack and you might hit the needle, but you might do it 100 more times in a row and not hit the needle. And, but the whole haystack's going in the sow, you know, so it only takes one or two microphages to take that in there. So, that's, still kind of misunderstood. So yeah, serum or blood is good as well. Blood swab, but serum's really the way to go. You're going to pick it up at 24, 36, 48 hours. And, there's plenty there. It's to ring the bell, even with a pooled sample.
How about for those countries where they still have a small boar stud and they still prefer to keep it vaccinated, but they still want to, like, the semen to be negative, right? And so would in that scenario, also the serum be a way to go, or oral fluids, or?
Yeah, in the later stages of shedding, the blood is not a good sample. But the trouble is you get really sporadic shedding, and you got that needle in the haystack situation. So even, mm-hmm. you know, a vaccinated animal might shed vaccine, or they might get infected with virus. It might mask it. They shed less, which means there's less needles in the haystack to find. And it's really just kind of a simple of finding a drop of virus in the ocean. And, you know, whereas in the blood, it's kind of distributed more evenly and there's a lot more there. So, I always kind of cringe at those situations. I understand they don't have diagnostic labs a lot of times to get the samples, but it's really a tough situation. I think you're going to probably, if real virus gets in there, or even the vaccine might shed, you know, they're probably going to shed downstream and infect the animals.
And you really need to immunize the population, right? The herd, the sows. Well, let's get a step back here. We're talking about monitoring, but we're talking about monitoring PRRS virus, right? Here, back to the U.S., what are the pathogens that are actually monitored on a routine basis? We talked about a lot of different pathogens, right? But which ones get actually monitored?
PRRS is the big one. Every boar stud should be testing for PRRS. They should be testing every production day. There's just so much consequence mm-hmm. downstream. And I think, you know, the most important thing is if you're going to spend the money on monitoring, then you can't let semen be used before you have results. And I think sometimes people talk themselves into that that's okay. It's really not useful or not money well spent if you're monitoring for PERS and then the people are inseminating. You know, we tried when we had a lot of boar stud breaks there in the industry in the early 2000s. You know, we had a couple cases where sow farms were infected with or were bred with infected semen. We knew it was infectious. We had positive PCR on semen. Sows were bred, pulled the sows out and saved the farm, so to speak. But that's mm-hmm. that's few and far between. In most cases, we were too late. So if you're breeding sows before you have a test result, that's not money. That's not a useful way to spend money. So I think, you know, holding semen, I would even argue, you know, making sure that sows are not being inseminated until the boar stud has an additional observation. Because we're literally looking, you know, if we find it in the blood, it's real tricky that first few days there when it's gonna show up in the blood first on the PCR, then the semen. But it's kind of a needle in a haystack in the semen. And like I said, the sow's getting the whole haystack. So giving the boar stud an opportunity to observe for clinical signs the next morning is really important for a lot of these viruses that we can't test for. So PERS monitoring daily, PED, Delta, TGE, that would be pretty routine monitoring fecal. They target boars that are loose. And, you know, pretty much every stud would at least be doing that once a week, or most people are doing that every production day, send in a fecal sample. The third one, as far as production, would be seasonally. Some systems, the boar stud is monitoring for Seneca virus. Seneca virus definitely sheds in the semen, so that would be another one. Other ones like parvovirus, circovirus, no one's really monitoring routinely for those. Then as far as boars entering the stud, it would be the typical testing that like a nucleus farm would do. So you got your PERS, mycoplasma, some people test pseudorabies and brucella, you know, TGE, Delta, Seneca, you know, all your typical that you'd have entering there.
For Seneca, what if they test positive? So do they just cool down for a little bit, or do they send those boars back?
Yeah, fortunately, there's been very few boar studs where we picked up Seneca. I'm only aware of a couple. And they did a closure similar to like what you do on a sow farm.
It's a quick one, right? Mm-hmm. So if I understand right here, PERS will test all the boars that are being collected that day. The enteric coronavirus is going to be a pooled sample,
yeah,
daily or weekly, targeting the loose tools. And then the other pathogens is like kind of on demand if there is the need.
Yeah. Yeah. PERS, there are a few boar studs that test every boar. That would typically be if the boar studs has a history, a poor history, or in a really hog dense area where infection's likely. Most people are doing a statistical sample, 95-10 or 95-5 each production day. So a lot of times that means 30 head or 40 to 45 head per day. So that would be more common. Normally they'll target boars that are going to a high value farm, like multiplication or nucleus level farm or negative farms. Then we also, so we're doing serum typically while the boar's on the dummy, while they're ejaculating. I've done some work that you only get about 10% that flinch while they're ejaculating to take a sample. It's pretty easy. We usually typically take it from a leg vein. The person that's can do it with the other hand. And then we also normally do a kind of a grid, I guess, or a checkerboard pattern of the entire population with oral fluids. So we with the oral fluid studies, typically they'll see you there about a day after it's found in the serum. So it's a good way to ensure that the whole population is getting sampled a little more randomly. Otherwise, they tend to bring the same boars up at the same time every day. And sometimes those are like neighbors, and you might miss an area of the building.
Yeah, here in the U.S., we're lucky that the logistics, the roads, the planes, and the labs with the same day test results a couple of times a day, that really allows what you said that's important, right, which is to test the sample before you actually using it. Otherwise, why would you be testing if you're not taking action? So can you talk a little bit more about that logistics of when the sample is collected, and then communication with the gestation barn folks? How do they know if the semen arriving there was tested or not, and how do they hold, or where is that semen being held until it's cleared?
Sure. Normally boar studs are starting at, you know, say 5 or 6 in the morning, and often the first 2 or 3 hours is those boars that are getting sampled are getting a blood sample taken. It's not a lot of fun snaring boars. You know, the first time is not too bad, but they're pretty powerful. There's some safety situations there. So, you know, getting to the blood swab and then the serum sample from the leg, that's mm-hmm. greatly reduced the risk of injury in boar studs. So that would be pretty normal. The first 2 to 3 hours of production, the boar is getting collected, and then a driver would take it to a diagnostic lab. Around here, we've got Iowa State and Minnesota and South Dakota State that both are really, really good and quick turnaround. Typically get results in that 5 to 6 o'clock at night. And once the results are released, then normally the drivers would pick up the semen and deliver it to farms that night or during the night or early the next morning. Some systems would deliver it to the entryway of the sow farms, might arrive in some cases before they get results, but I don't ever approve of semen getting, you know, inside the sow farm until there's a test result. Different people do it a different way. Some want a confirmation that the results were negative every day. Other people trust that the boar stud's gonna stop the drivers.
They'll trust the boar stud guys will hit the mayday button.
Yeah, exactly. And
interrupt movement.
Yeah.
But then the safest thing is to have that holding facility at the boar stud so that the driver will only pick up a cleared semen, right?
Yeah, that's how I like to see it done. And sometimes there's pressure, the drivers, you know, they want to get on the road or, you know, those types of things. In some areas, they just physically cannot get it to a diagnostic lab for that same day result. In those cases, you know, it's a little more risky for sure. But some of them would maybe take a blood sample from the boars the day before collection. So then they'd actually get results the same day, but the sample maybe was taken, you know, 18 hours before the boar was collected. And there's still a chance there could be a virus in the semen, but probably, you know, a lot better than doing nothing, and still a fair amount of security there.
Sunhee is a professional solution provider for enzymes, probiotics, and functional additives. We offer customized formulas to target nutritional issues in livestock and maximize the utility of animal feed. Find us on sunhee.com for more information.
All right. And anything else you would point out to reduce that risk of transmission? You mentioned for bacteria, you have antimicrobials in the extender. For those other pathogens, we're testing for them. What else can people do or implement to avoid any transmission?
Yeah, the holding time is just extremely important, not to have access, not to be putting the semen into sows until you have a test result. If that's just absolutely not possible, then off feed is all the different studies that are done. The most consistent finding by far is off feed boars. So in the absence of testing, boars collected on a Monday, delivered to the sow farm, make absolute sure that the boar stud staff is in there Tuesday morning doing chores and looking for off-feed boars before the semen is used on a sow farm. And there's a lot of viruses, probably any virus that goes systemic, has a predilection for the reproductive tract, is probably going to be shed in semen. So that's the one thing that is definitely worthwhile, observing for off-feed boars. We have protocols in place at all my clients. Someone has to be there before the feed drops. They go up and down the alleys and they look for boars that are not up looking for feed. It might be because they're lame. It might be because they're infected with something. So someone walks in there and they see 8-10 boars, laying down and not interested in eating, and all the rest are standing up, waiting for that feed to drop, then stop everything. Do not use that semen. So it might be PRRS. You really have no idea what it is at that point. Uh-huh. It's they're tricky. Even with boars infected with an L1C5 might not show much for clinical signs. So, that observation at feeding, it's not like you walk in and they're panting or, anything like that. It's just, they don't feel like eating. And that's the most important clinical sign, not only for PRRS, but for other viruses also.
Sick boars, maybe fever, they just don't feel like eating, right? That's a very good practical tip. It's similar in sow farms, right? Of off-feed sows, typically one of the first signs of PRRS or flu, or like you said, any other thing that's systemic and causing fever.
Yes. Speaking of flu, that's another one that I get asked a lot about influenza. Very similar to mycoplasma. Influenza does show up in boar studs occasionally. It's kind of impossible to keep that out. Most boar studs are running 70, 80, 90% replacement rate. And at some point it's going to come in there. We can hold them in the quarantine. We can test in the quarantine, but you got people going in and out of there, and the people shed before they have a fever. We have them, we have them take their temperature before they go in the boar stud, but it's not unusual for someone to not have a fever and then later in that same day feel like crap and go home or miss work the next day and they're probably shedding. So we do pick it up occasionally in boar studs. Same deal, sending downstream, not aware of any transmission. I can't ever think of a case where it showed up in the boar stud on on oral fluid samples, and a week later there was 3 sow farms that started coughing. I've never seen that. So I don't think it's really a significant risk.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at fortivaimpact.com. Vaccinova, formulate to your needs, custom-made vaccines. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Uniferon 200 from Pharmacosmos, the iron dextrin for baby pigs, which promotes faster growth. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost pig health and performance.
And we talked a lot about viruses, right? And how about toxins, bacterial effects, and semen quality that people should be concerned? What do you see commonly out there?
Yeah, that's a kind of a whole different avenue. There's a whole host of bacteria that affect fertility that don't necessarily make animals sick. Serratia is one that probably most people have heard about. It feeds on the sperm cell membrane, can be pretty devastating. There's different strains. In our lab, we see probably 80 to 100 cases a year of serratia at least. Quite a wide variety. Sometimes the motility and the acrosome integrity is not affected that much, and other times it's dead. And, a day and a half, 2 days, it's all dead. So kind of a load issue is important there. Another one's Enterococcus. There's a toxin-producing Enterococcus and a non-toxigenic. So whenever we identify an Enterococcus at our lab, we have it sent to University of Illinois, and they test for the two cytolysins. because the toxic one doesn't cause a problem with the sperm itself, but when the semen gets in the sow, it kind of causes an allergic reaction almost, and you'll see like a bloody discharge behind the sow. So those are two that we're always attuned to at my lab. We see either those two come through, and that's a phone call to the producer. You know, that's my lab manager calling me. I'm calling the producer right away. So those are two big ones. There's a lot of environmental bacteria, Burkholderia, Pseudomonas, Stenotrophomonas, Alkaligenes, a whole host of those that a lot of times a lot of them are biofilm formers. They can get in the water systems. They can get in the vats. They can get, get anywhere basically. And those are for the most part a dose dependent effect. So if you have a really heavy load, my colleague, Dr. Hood just did some work with Ralstonia. We find that in water systems quite a bit. And showed that at heavy loads, it does affect motility and acrosome integrity. At low levels, doesn't do much. And that's the case with most of them. I think, everyone would like to have zero bacteria in the semen, but it really is a dose-dependent issue with those. Then we have the toxin. It might be a toxin formed by bacteria. We think it's really important to have antibiotics in the extender as preservative and get extender with the semen as soon as possible after collection, so those bacteria can't produce or limits their toxin production. So there's bacterial toxins. Then there's toxins, unintentional toxins, and that's probably the most common case investigations I've done over the last 10 years is unintended toxin exposure. It might be cleaners. Maybe lab staff had something on their fingers, dishwashing detergent or whatever. It gets drug into the semen. And a lot of those cleaners are, digest that cell wall of the sperm. And so we've implemented post-production acrosome integrity evaluations over the last 6-8 years. So a lot of bore studs in the past would do motility. They do motility after extension and then day 1, 2, 3, 4 motility checks. Now we have them doing acrosome integrity checks before the semen leaves the bore stud, kind of like with the PERS testing. And if you see a bunch of acrosome damage, kind of trace back your steps, something happened. It might be materials, plastics, chemicals. There's just a whole host of possibilities there. And no one ever intends for those things to happen, but sometimes things happen, and that's a way to prevent kind of a disaster downstream. Because if you're destroying the acrosomes and that cell membrane, you're not going to have bread. You're not going to have pregnant sows.
A lot of important details there to determine quality, right? So, like you said, a lot of stuff to talk about. It has been fun. And we do have several other questions here to keep going. But for the sake of time, you're going to leave it here for now. Let's call this part one. And then in the next episode, we're going to come back with Dr. Reichs here for part two. There's much more to talk about. And we'll leave it here now and see you next time.
Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.